Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are strapping in for a journey, a really fascinating one, into one of the most elegant and, well, fundamental concepts in the cosmos, symmetry. And our guide for this is the remarkable mathematician Ian Stewart and his book Symmetry, The Universe's Organizing Principle.
Yeah, and this is such a crucial deep dive for you, the listener, because while we're trying to elevate symmetry beyond just the intuitive stuff.
Right, like we all sort of feel symmetry, don't we? You see a snowflake or maybe a butterfly.
Yep, a perfectly formed snowflake, a balanced piece of art. You know it when you see it.
It feels like beauty, balance, everything lining up just right.
It does. But Stewart's argument, and this is the core of it, is that symmetry is way more than just looking nice. It's a profound abstract force. It's the actual universal organizing principle dictating the laws of physics.
Wow. Okay.
And it's the fundamental tool guiding modern scientists, you know, in their search for a theory of everything.
So the relevance today isn't just about spotting pretty patterns then. It's much deeper.
Oh, much deeper. It's about the very bedrock of reality. Like, why do the laws of physics hold constant? Why does energy always behave predictably?
Okay.
The answer, as Stewart demonstrates really clearly, is symmetry.
All right, let's talk about our guide then, Ian Stewart.
Yeah, let's start with him. So Ian Stewart is an emeritus professor of mathematics at the University of Warwick. He's genuinely one of the world's most gifted popularizers of science.
I saw he's written over 100 books.
Yeah.
Including big ones like The Mathematics of Life.
Over 100? It's incredible. That speaks to an amazing fluency.
But what makes his perspective on symmetry, this specific topic, so crucial? Okay, let's unpack this.
Well, the key thing is Stewart isn't coming at this like a physicist who just uses symmetry as a tool to describe things. He's a mathematician revealing the inherent beauty and honestly the kind of terrifying power of the tool itself, specifically group theory.
Right, group theory. I've heard of that, but vaguely.
That's the key distinction here. He's the perfect translator for us. He has this rigorous, deep grasp of group theory. That's the abstract language used to describe symmetry. But he's totally determined to show us how that abstract language connects, say, the art world to the quantum world.
So he bridges the gap.
Exactly. Translating really complex concepts into vivid, relatable prose. It's quite a skill.
And that translation takes us right to the book's central idea, its premise.
Yeah.
Which, you said, requires a bit of a conceptual leap for most of us.
It does. We have to shift our thinking. Symmetry, according to Stewart, is far more than how something looks. It's defined as the property of invariance under transformation.
Invariance under transformation. Okay, that sounds mathematical.
It is. But that phrase is really the beating heart of Stewart's argument. It just means that an object, or, and this is critical, a law of nature, stays completely unchanged after you do something to it.
Like what?
Like rotating it or reflecting it in a mirror or even just moving it through space. If the essential property remains the same after that action, that's symmetry.
Okay, I think I'm starting to get it. So the purpose of the book isn't just to show us pretty symmetries.
No, no, it's to shift us from thinking of symmetry as just a passive quality, something things have, to seeing it as an active organizing principle of reality itself.
And the mathematical language for that is group theory.
Precisely. Group theory is like the invisible thread linking art, biology, chemistry, and the deepest corners of physics. It's the unifying concept.
And how does Stewart structure this journey for the reader? Does it build logically?
Oh, perfectly. He starts with the tangible stuff faces, snowflakes, things we can easily picture. Then he introduces the formal language, the abstraction, through the really dramatic history of Everest Galois and group theory.
I've heard that story is pretty wild.
It is. And finally, he shows how that formal language applies to the really profound stuff, revealing the link between symmetry and unbreakable physical laws through the work of Emmy Noether. All right, let's lay that foundation then, starting with the intuitive stuff we see every day.
Right. Bilateral symmetry in ourselves, our left and right sides, are mostly mirror images. Or rotational symmetry in a flower, you can turn it, and it looks the same. That's what we see.
That's the starting point.
Yes, that's where the human eye naturally starts. But Stewart insists we absolutely must shift our focus. Symmetry isn't defined by what an object looks like. It's defined by the set of actions you can do to it, while its identity remains invariant, unchanged.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting, especially thinking about how humans create things. The book talks about the 17 wallpaper groups. What's that about?
This is such a powerful, concrete example of how mathematics can define limits. Mathematicians actually proved that there are only 17, exactly 17 fundamentally different ways to arrange a repeating pattern on a flat, two-dimensional surface, like a wallpaper or a tiled floor.
Wait, hold on. Only 17. Think about it. All the tile floors, ancient mosaics, fabric patterns, through all of history, across every culture, you're telling me every single one of those two-dimensional repeating paths, no matter how complex it looks, belongs to just one of those 17 groups.
Absolutely. No more, no less. It's a profound insight, really. Mathematics imposes these fundamental limits even on creativity. It proves the ultimate bounds of human visual design in this way.
So you can change the colors, the motifs.
Infinitely. You can vary the color, the specific shape within the pattern, but the underlying structure, the way it repeats and fits together, must conform to one of those 17 rigid mathematical classifications.
Wow. That really shows the power of the mathematical tool itself.
And speaking of the tool, the language that formalizes all this is group theory, right? And you
Oh,
mentioned
yeah.
its origin story is dramatic and tragic.
Oh, it absolutely is. It's the story of Évariste Galois. He was this brilliant French mathematician, barely out of his teens, in the early 19th century, and he developed the foundations of group theory.
Why? What was he trying to do? Not describe physics, I assume. Not at all. His motivation was pure algebra. He was trying to solve this really abstract, long-standing problem about something called the quintic equation, basically, finding roots for fifth-degree polynomials. It was one of the great unsolved math problems of the time.
So a totally esoteric ancient algebra puzzle.
Exactly. And in tackling that, he created this revolutionary mathematical system, completely unaware, as far as we know, that he was forging the foundational leverage for much of 20th century physics.
That's incredible. But the tragic part.
The tragic part is that due to political turmoil in France at the time and some personal disputes, he ended up in a duel and he died at age 20.
20.
The night before the duel, apparently, he stayed up all night scribbling down his final mathematical thoughts, these world-changing notes, telling his friend to make sure they got published.
What an unimaginable legacy. A language for the universe, basically born out of a duel over some personal affair. Okay, but for those of us listening who aren't mathematicians, what is a mathematical group in a sort of functional sense? Forget the textbook definitions for a second.
Right, let's simplify. Basically, a group is just a set of transformations or actions. Let's take the simple example of rotating a square. You can rotate it 90 degrees, 180, 270, or 360 degrees, right? And after each rotation, except maybe the 360, which is back to start, it looks the same. Those rotations are the elements of the group.
Right.
And a group has specific rules. Like if you do one rotation, say 90 degrees, and then another, say 180 degrees, the result, 270 degrees, is also in the set of rotations, self-contained. And critically, for every action, there's an undoing action, an inverse. Rotate 90 degrees. You can rotate 270 degrees to get back.
So it's a closed system of actions where everything is reversible and contained.
Exactly. It perfectly captures the essence of symmetry operations.
Okay. And that group language then led to, well, you said the single most profound discovery linking math and physics, thanks to Emmy Noether.
Yes, Emmy Noether. Einstein himself called her the most important woman in the history of mathematics, which is quite the endorsement.
Okay.
Her groundbreaking theorem, Noether's theorem, provides the theoretical reason why the universe is consistent and reliable, why the fundamental laws work the way they do.
So what does this mathematical consistency, this theorem, actually mean for the real world? How does it connect?
It proves something absolutely fundamental. Every continuous symmetry in the basic laws of physics implies a corresponding unbreakable conservation law.
Okay, unpack continuous symmetry and conservation law.
Right. A continuous symmetry is one that can happen by any amount. Like you can shift something in space by an inch or a mile or any amount in between. That's continuous. Compare that to, say, rotating a square. You can only really rotate it by 90, 180, 270 degrees and have it look the same. That's discrete.
Got it. And conservation laws.
Those are things like the conservation of energy. Energy can't be created or destroyed, only changed in form. Or conservation of momentum, basically. The total oomph of motion in a system stays constant unless an external force acts.
So Noether's theorem links these two ideas.
Directly. It changes our understanding of those conservation laws. They aren't just things we observe happening, like, hey, look, energy seems to be conserved in our experiments. Noether showed their logical necessity is dictated by the symmetries of the universe.
Wait, so Is it really saying that the consistency of time itself guarantees the conservation of energy? Or is it just a really strong correlation? How does the math make it necessary?
It's a logical necessity. It's quite profound. Consider the symmetry of time. The laws of physics seem to be the same today as they were yesterday and as they will be tomorrow, right? That's time translation symmetry.
Okay, seems reasonable.
Well, Noether's theorem shows that because of that symmetry, the mathematical structure demands the conservation of energy. Energy cannot be created or destroyed as a direct logical consequence of time's consistency.
That's mind-boggling. So the fact that the laws don't change over time is the reason energy is conserved.
Precisely. And similarly, symmetry in space, the fact that the laws of physics are the same here as they are, say, across the galaxy, that spatial symmetry implies the conservation of momentum.
So symmetry isn't just describing physical laws.
It is the reason they exist and why they are unbreakable. It's the bedrock.
Okay, but hang on. If symmetry creates this kind of unbreakable perfection, these perfect laws, why isn't our universe just, you know, a featureless perfect crystal? Why is it so messy and structured and complex? Seems like a paradox.
It absolutely is the crucial paradox, and Stewart calls this the creative power of imperfection, a universe that actually realized all its fundamental symmetries perfectly. Well, it would be a uniform, undifferentiated soup, just static, no complexity, no structure, certainly no life.
Huh. So we tend to celebrate perfection and symmetry as ideal, but you're saying the actual structure of the universe, the interesting stuff, is built on failure, on breaking that perfect symmetry.
Precisely. Structure, complexity, everything interesting is generated by symmetry breaking. It's the transition from a state of high symmetry, which is often unstable, to a state of lower symmetry, which is usually more stable.
Can you give an example?
The classic one is a pencil balanced perfectly on its sharp tip.
Okay, I can picture that. Very unstable.
Right. But in that balanced state, it has perfect rotational symmetry around its vertical axis. You can spin it, and it looks the same, but it won't stay like that. When it falls,
it picks a direction.
It picks one direction randomly. Yeah. And in doing so, it instantly breaks that perfect rotational symmetry. It settles into a stable but much less symmetrical state lying on its side. That act of falling, of breaking symmetry, creates a specific observable outcome.
And that seemingly necessary failure or fall is what creates the structures we actually see.
Yes, exactly. And this isn't just a neat analogy. Scientifically, this concept is absolutely central to things like the Higgs mechanism in particle physics.
The Higgs boson, that whole thing.
That whole thing. The idea is that early in the universe, there was a state of higher symmetry. The Higgs field then spontaneously fell or transitioned, breaking that symmetry. And that very act of breaking is what gives fundamental particles their mass. Without symmetry breaking, particles might be massless.
So symmetry breaking creates the necessary asymmetry for existence as we know it.
You got it. It creates the differences, the structures, the potential for complexity.
Okay, this leads us really nicely into the core themes, the big takeaways from the book. The first one, it sounds like, and maybe the most important, is rethinking symmetry itself as symmetry as invariance.
Exactly. Stop looking at the surface appearance, the way something looks. Instead, look only at the set of actions, the transformations that leave its core nature completely unchanged. That's the real definition.
And you mentioned we could apply this invariance test to our own lives. How would that work?
Well, think about managing a really chaotic project at work. Maybe processes are changing, team members are shifting, deadlines are moving. It feels like constant flux. Right. So how do you find stability? You use the invariance test. You identify all those transformations, all the things changing. And then you ask, what is the one core element, the principle, the goal that must remain invariant through all that change?
Maybe it's maintaining client confidentiality.
Mm-hmm.
Or hitting the ultimate quality standard.
Could be. If you realize, say, client privacy is the absolute invariant core, then even if the software changes or the timeline shifts or team members come and go, that invariant principle has to guide every single decision. That becomes the robust, unchanging heart of the chaotic system.
That's a really practical way to think about it. Okay, next big theme, the unreasonable effectiveness of abstract mathematics.
Oh, this one is just amazing. The fact that group theory, which Galois invented purely for abstract algebra for solving polynomial equations.
With no thought of the real world.
Zero thought of physics. The fact that this abstract tool became the essential toolkit for structuring the entire standard model of particle physics in the 20th century.
Mm.
It's just incredible.
What does that tell us?
Well, it reinforces this profound idea that pursuing mathematical elegance just for its own sake, pure abstract thought, can have these monumental, completely unforeseen real-world consequences. It ends up describing the very structure of reality.
It's not just a game, then.
Not at all. And Stuart really emphasizes that symmetry isn't just descriptive, it's an active guide for discovery in science. Physicists don't just stumble upon symmetries after the fact.
They propose them. They look for them.
They actively propose new symmetries as hypotheses to explain things or unify theories. A huge modern example is the ongoing search for supersymmetry, or UEY.
Right. I've heard of SUEY. What's the core idea there in terms of symmetry?
SUEY proposes a new, deeper symmetry connecting the two fundamental types of particles, fermions, which make up matter, like electrons and quarks, and bosons, which carry forces, like photons. The idea is that every known fermion has a heavier undiscovered boson partner, and every known boson has a heavier undiscovered fermion partner.
So it doubles the particle zoo, basically.
Pretty much. But physicists are searching for this new higher symmetry because they believe it could solve some really deep problems in the current standard model, maybe help unify the fundamental forces. It's symmetry acting as a signpost, guiding the search for that elusive theory of everything.
Fascinating. And then we come back to that paradox again. Symmetry breaking creates complexity.
Yes, the flip side. Imperfection isn't just a flaw. It's the necessary driver of evolution, structure, everything interesting.
And the reflection here is maybe in our own lives. Sticking to perfectly balanced, symmetrical routines might feel stable, but it doesn't lead to growth.
Exactly. The most interesting outcomes, the most complex developments, often arise when we intentionally introduce a bit of asymmetry, when we break those stable, predictable patterns to achieve something new. Growth often requires a degree of controlled symmetry breaking.
The book sounds like it's packed with these kinds of perspective-shifting ideas.
Oh, absolutely. It genuinely reshapes your worldview. We pulled out maybe three core concepts, kind of like key quotes or ideas that really stick with you.
Okay, let's hear them. Idea number one.
The foundational definition we keep coming back to. Symmetry is not about what an object looks like, but what can be done to it. It is the property of being immune to change. That just forces you to change your perspective on everything you observe.
Right. Don't look, act. Okay, idea number two.
This one relates to Emmy Noether. Emmy Noether discovered the why behind conservation laws. They are direct, logical consequences of the symmetries of space and time. This elevates symmetry from just a property to the bedrock reason for the universe's predictable behavior.
The why behind the laws. Powerful. And number three.
The paradox we just discussed. The universe is not only a product of perfect symmetries, but also of broken ones. It is in the breaking of symmetry that complexity, structure, and even life itself finds its origin. The world's interesting. It exists because of calculated, necessary imperfection.
Wow. Those are potent ideas. How does understanding all this abstract math and these big concepts actually translate into, you know, real-life applications for someone listening?
Well, one major one is simply enhanced scientific literacy. It sounds basic, but it's huge. Now, when you hear or read news about the Large Hadron Collider, the LHC, searching for new particles.
Which happens fairly often.
Right. You'll have a much deeper conceptual understanding. You'll know that physicists aren't just randomly smashing things together. They're often looking for the subtle consequences of broken symmetries from the early universe, or hunting for evidence of new proposed supersymmetries like SUEY. You're essentially learning the deeper language they're speaking.
That definitely adds a layer of meaning. What else?
It also gives you a profoundly deeper appreciation of nature and art. Seriously. A walk in the park becomes different.
How so?
You start actively noticing the symmetries, the five-fold rotational symmetry of many flowers, the amazing helical symmetry of a DNA molecule model, the near-perfect bilateral symmetry of a butterfly's wings. It adds this whole new layer of mathematical understanding and elegance to the natural world.
And you could even try to spot those 17 wallpaper groups.
You absolutely could. Look at tiled floors in old buildings, intricate fabric designs, decorative patterns. You can literally try to classify them based on their underlying mathematical structure.
Yeah.
It turns the world into a kind of symmetry puzzle.
That sounds quite fun, actually.
And finally, as we touched on, you gain a powerful problem-solving model from that core idea of invariance.
Right. Finding the unchanging core.
Exactly. In any complex system, could be a personal habit you want to change, a relationship dynamic, a business strategy first, identify all the forces of change, the transformations happening, then pinpoint the essential core element that must remain invariant through it all. That's usually the most robust, most critical part of the entire system to focus on and protect.
That's a really versatile mental tool. Okay, as we wrap up, what's the one final thought or takeaway that really stands out to you from diving into Stewart's work on symmetry?
For me, I think it's the sheer unity of the concept. It blows my mind that the exact same mathematical framework, group theory, that Stewart uses to classify geometric patterns in ancient Islamic mosaics is the exact same mathematical structure used today to organize the fundamental particles and forces in the standard model of particle physics. It's just, wow. Symmetry truly feels like a single unifying key unlocking secrets across seemingly completely separate domains of knowledge, from art to the cosmos.
That's a fantastic point, the universality. For me, I think what surprised me the most, or maybe resonated the most, was the philosophical side of symmetry breaking.
The creative imperfection.
Yeah. It really challenges that deep-seated human instinct that perfection, perfect balance, perfect symmetry is always the ultimate goal. Stewart reminds us that strategic imperfection isn't chaos. It's actually necessary creation. It's the spontaneous collapse of that perfect, unstable balance that gives rise to all the structure, all the growth, and eventually even us. Makes you appreciate the flaws a bit more, perhaps.
A beautiful thought to end on. Imperfection is the engine of reality.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.